Folks, back with Mayor. Welcome back, Mayor.
Thank you.
Every time I say Mayor, I think of a mayor. You know, like Mayor of Stouffville, a Mayor of Markham, and this lady could be the mayor, but she's too shy. I'm just kidding. She's not shy. I want to tell you folks that we'll be dropping into the Hummingbird Hub just around the corner, 6331 Main Street in Stouffville, and they're bringing together a lot of organizations similar to ours, just out to help people and want to have a central focus for people who need support in a variety of different ways. And we'll be dropping by there and be available to say hello, talk to, and if you want to know anything about sharing the burden, how you might be come involved with us, please drop in. Again, I'm Scott. I'll be with Mayor, and I hope our good friend Jay. You available?
Yeah, I'll be there. Yeah, for sure. Right.
I'll be there. That's a slogan that we use at Sharing the Burden quite often, too, and I've kind of coined that as my favorite. I like to think that I'll be there when I'm needed, and wherever that is. It doesn't necessarily mean in some joint or jail kind of thing. When we look back, and you know, we're looking at getting rid of things we don't like in our lives, when you look back and you think, you know, I got involved in booze and drugs, I became an addict. We talked a little bit about it in the car on the way up here, but in your own words, how did it start, and how early did it start, and when did you figure it's not so easy to dump this stuff as I'd like to think it was?
Well, it started in stages, you know, as a fun thing, a recreational thing.
Mm-hmm. What was it, the potter or something?
Yeah, it started off with pot, yes. Yeah. And then I graduated, Scott.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, congratulations. In your post-grad.
I graduated, and unfortunately to other things.
Yeah.
But I'm not an opiate user. I don't do needle, have never done a needle or okay. anything to that effect. Just a little more mild stuff.
And, yeah, yeah. Like meth or something?
No,
or?
Never.
Okay.
Just cocaine.
Oh, coke or something, yeah. Crack or?
No, not really.
No, just expensive stuff. She's a rich addict. Anyway, I'm just kidding you out there, folks. But there always is a progression, and oftentimes I've listened to, you know, and I know stories from the inside and from the outside, but I've often listened to people that say somewhere along the road, and they're not sure exactly where, and whatever the drug was they were using at the time, they crossed a line, you know, it's like an imaginary line. And then when the person realized that he or she, you know, could be in trouble if he or she wanted to get rid of this habit, and it's too late. They're, you know, a bona fide addict, and they need help, they need God, they need support in every sense.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, where do they turn? Like, what brought you to that stage in your life where you knew you had to do something about this thing?
Well, I was sitting there one day and I looked around me.
Where were you sitting?
Just amongst, you know, other addicts. I'm like, what the hell am I doing here? I gotta get the bleep home. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So,
is that long ago? Or?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay. It's long ago, so you relapsed, and anyway.
Yeah.
And, folks, I'm just telling you the story the way it is. And,
yeah, and then,
she knows.
Yeah, so right now I'm around people that are supportive. They love me. They want the best for me.
Yeah.
They understand me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have my quirks.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
but overall, you know, I believe that any addict can recover if they want to. Anybody can stop doing anything if they want to.
Yeah.
Right? But it has to come from inside.
Yeah.
It has to come from within you.
Yeah.
And, you know, the most important thing is having hope. Because if you don't have any, and just having faith. If you don't have any faith, you have no hope. So that's how I feel about it.
Yeah. And it's huge.
It is huge.
Without hope, as a matter of fact, we spoke a little yesterday about, you know, sharing the burden's presence in these jails. And, I see the jails as the last frontier for a lot of people, you know, in different places. And, they're as close to death as anybody out there. And many of them, I think it's the last ditch, it's the last chance thing. They get in there and, they thank God they're in there. Yeah. You know, some of them. And I mean, like, you know, we all know you can access whatever you want probably in there too, but,
you sure can.
You know, yeah, we, which is a shame, but they seem somehow, a lot of them anyway, able to stay away from the stuff in there,
mm-hmm.
where they couldn't outside, because I think they know it's kind of like a last chance. And I think people are, you know, they're, if we can't instill that little bit of hope mm-hmm. and faith in them at that time, we're going to lose them. And that's how serious it is to me. It's, you know, and as you know, I lost my boy and mm-hmm. tons of people now who I've met in these different scenarios, you know, whether inside or outside. And I carry naloxone kits everywhere I go, and just mm-hmm. in case, you know. But it's a serious, serious issue. Unfortunately, it almost has to be personalized, like it was in my life, to make people realize we got to do something about this stuff. It is brutal. And everybody in the past would stay to a drug route, whether it's kind of the coke route or meth route or opiate. Now they're jumping from everything into fentanyl. It's an insanity that I don't even get. You know, I don't even understand it.
It's like an epidemic.
Yeah.
Totally.
So what do we do?
All we can do is, do our best to try and assist people in maybe curbing the route that they're taking and talking to them Sometimes it takes a stranger to actually bring things to your attention mm-hmm. that normally, you know, if your mom or dad say something to you, you're not going to listen to them, but a lot of times it would take someone that you don't know to actually bring that to your attention.
Well, I know that even in my faith, I know the author of the faith said, well, you can never do anything at home. You've got to go out in the hinterlands where people will recognize and do something with you. At home, it's like, even like Jesus in my faith was looked upon by his brothers as a kind of a nutcase, you know, originally, because mm-hmm. his ideas were just so foreign to anything they'd ever heard before. And I don't think much has changed on that front. And regardless of what your religion or none is, you gotta believe in something.
You gotta believe.
Especially if you get into the addictive thing, like or a compulsion or a mental illness, you know. And mental illness is something everyone I've ever asked had to admit in one way or another, whether it was depressive or anxiety related, had something mm-hmm. that could well be called a mental illness.
Absolutely.
And they need help with that too, so yep. at the same time. Your experience on the inside, and we talked about IMAT this morning, which is intensive management for, people with disabilities.
Correct.
And often emotional, mental disabilities, and usually medicated to fairly heavily, the ones I end up talking to quite oftentimes. And dealing with those kinds of people, you know, if you don't have something on your side to help you get through, you just can't.
It's true.
And plus you have often, 6, 8, 10, 12 people in there, all with different kinds of illnesses. So there is no program on earth and no person on earth who can really take a group like that and bring it together and do something with it. But something higher seems to be able to do that. And we need that. Like, we can't do these things on our own. No. We've got to have something, We've got to believe in something.
Absolutely.
And I thank God you do. I think that's your secret in the end, and you're quite adamant about that.
Absolutely. Thank you, Scott.
I know your mosque is on your back porch, so I mean, it's easy to you for you to get to a praying place and do some good works, whether it be directly there or wherever. I don't think it matters, but we got to reach out. We got to make a difference in some lives. At the end of the day, we kind of had the biggest house, done the biggest deals, made the most millions, and in the end, none of it'll mean anything to us
nope.
as we close our eyes for the last time. So, we've got to find purpose in our lives. How do we find purpose? What are you looking for as you design, to the best of your ability, the rest of your life well in the recovery mode, and getting used to being free, for one thing. I put freedom as the caption for you, because, you are, not that you don't know what it is, you know well what it is, but it's got to be kind of exciting and yet frightening at the same time when in your head you say, I'm not going back there.
I'm not. And a lot has a lot to do with having a routine, right? Once you have a routine, mm-hmm. right, of course it has to include God in there throughout your day. Yeah. And, you know, as he says, if you remember me, I'll remember you, right?
Good point, yep.
And, yeah, just to have a routine, a daily routine. Like, I'll go to the gym, I'll do some work, just being productive as opposed to, you know, not being busy and having those thoughts and those people and, you know, what you used to do, whatever, go through your mind. So I just stay away from all of it and, you know, I'm looking forward to doing new things with you know, certain new individuals and right?
Yeah. Yeah,
new experiences and, right? There's a lot more to life than being an addict.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There's a lot more than escape, really, and that's where it starts. We don't like the way this looks or feels, so let's go over here because this is kind of, I'm good over here. I can dance, I can sing, I can talk to people. You know what I mean? Yeah. And over there, I can't. So, does forgiveness play any part in your recovery?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. First of all, you have to start off with forgiving yourself. Right? Mm-hmm. Because being an addict, there's a lot of things that you may have done to people that love you,
yeah,
right? Even to yourself. And
yeah.
You know, you have to get beyond that. You have to, you know, forgive yourself, and you've got to just move forward. You can't hold on to all that, and just, you know, and every day is a new day, and try to live that day the best as you can. And not allow your past to ruin your future.
Yeah, good point.
Right.
You know, our yesterday, today, and tomorrow that we read in all the meetings.
Absolutely.
You like it. That's what I live by this very moment. You know, I try and stay here so hard, you know.
Say it.
No, I'd have to read it. I don't know where it is. But I love it, and Jay, I say this in the places all the time, and I've read it thousands of times. I just love it, you know, just because it takes yesterday and tomorrow out of it, and we're never in yesterday. We're never in tomorrow. We're always
in the
it's
now.
Always
yeah.
now,
right? Right.
Yeah. Like, why do people spend all that time over there and there when it's always now?
Mm-hmm.
And now doesn't change. Now is eternity. You know, like the last thing and the next thing are divided by now. So now never moves. It's like, I don't know. Somehow God's in the now. You know what I mean? You go there and stay in the now and you're okay. You know. And as soon as you go outside of that, you're not okay.
That's true.
Because you're comparing something you can't change or something you think might happen, but you don't know whether it will or not. So.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, forgiveness is a big thing. We've got to,
you
hit it right. Like, you've got to forgive you. And to forgive you, you know, you got to respect you. You got to love you. You got to go back, to the Creator, if you will.
Absolutely.
You know, and say, well, you know what? You know, you made me and everybody else. You got to love what you made because you don't make any mistakes. So I dare not look down, even on me, you know. So so no matter what I did, the worst guy on earth or the best guy, it doesn't really matter. If I want to be well, I've got to forgive me, you know. And I got to say, well, yeah, I don't know why I had to play that part in the play, but obviously it was part of the design, so I needed to. I had to to get on to the next part, so... So I did, and I hate it, but, you know, you made me do it. It's your fault, so help me out of this. You're from Pakistan.
Yes, I am.
But you didn't spend much time there.
No.
Yeah, so you're probably, have you been back to?
Years ago, yes. I speak a couple of different languages.
Okay.
With a Canadian accent, of course.
Yeah. What do you speak?
I can speak some Urdu, Hindi.
Oh, Hindi, okay. That's a common denominator for, well, any of Indian descent, anyway.
Or some.
Pakistani.
It's Urdu. Our language is U-R-D-U.
That's the language, official language of Pakistan?
Well, there's several languages. Yeah, but I would say that is the number one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I know Raj speaks Hindi, and one of our friends that comes on here quite often.
I just learned that from watching a lot of Indian movies, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Bollywood's great.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he had that. Just thinking about habits here, as my friend here puts her pen on and off. Folks, if you hear little noises, it's either her or I shuffling around, wondering what the next thing in the agenda is. And we never have an agenda. We always come unrehearsed, real time, and whatever comes out, comes out. And folks, you can't lie in the moment. You know what I mean? You can only lie by projecting or again, going back. Like if you're right here in the moment, you know, there's no considerations. Yesterday and tomorrow don't count. So there's actually silence, I think.
Yeah, we didn't come prepared at all.
No, and we're not. We don't want to be. And looking ahead, you know, what are your plans? You know, I know your secret is to stay busy. You've got an agenda. You work out. You do this and that. You've got a family who supports you and allows you to take part in some business activities, your brothers and so on. And do you look beyond that at all? I mean, I know you'd like to come back with me or something like me into the institutions and do some of that kind of work.
But, I would like to. There's certain opportunities that are being sent to me. I used to work at CAMH for 5 years back in the day.
Yeah.
So I'd actually like to do something there again.
Yeah. What did you do there?
I did some peer support. Worked for the schizophrenia department and just dealing with clients, you know?
Yeah,
I loved every one of them.
Yeah. when you look at diseases or illnesses like schizophrenia, one of the things I've learned from the work, same places I met you, was that when you're dealing with somebody with these kinds of things who either hear voices or have visions or whatever it happens to be able to honestly listen without either an agenda or an opinion and to hear who they are and what they believe and what they're doing, it's kind of interesting. And I've tried that, you know, and mindfulness comes to mind, just giving the person everything I have, you know, in a form of listening. And how someone, I'll give you an example, one lady not that long ago talked about climbing up sides of buildings and things like this, and how she would stop at a certain area and things would be going on and it was troublesome. And anyway, it was interesting because I just listened and waited. And then she would say every once in a while, "I'm not sure that's real," you know, and she was coming up with stuff that I know in regular therapy, they'd hide that forever and ever and ever. Mm-hmm. And yet here was a stranger, yet it was coming out. And that's when I know, you know, the sense of the higher calling or whatever, like, you know, that there's a sense of spirit in the works that makes things happen. And that's what I exist for, that kind of stuff, you know, and it happens a lot. And I don't know, it's like those ladies in the room with all kinds of different illnesses, and all of a sudden they're all quiet, and you know, when I see guards gathering outside the doors, they're looking and trying to figure out what the heck's going on here. Mm-hmm. How can they be like that?
Well, a lot of times, from what I've seen, is that they're over medicated. To be honest with you,
that's one thing. Yeah,
they're way overly medicated, and I think a lot of that has to do is to make them manageable, so they would have to do the least amount of work, to be honest with you, right?
Takes the load off the so-called.
Yeah, so they're not really getting the help that they need to get better, I don't think, because medication is not always the answer.
No, especially when they kind of choose what meds to give them to, and that's not doesn't work. But anyway, that's another.
I think a lot, inside story. I think a little love would get them a lot further. Then the meds.
Yeah, I think you got the answer there. Let's hang with the love, and we'll take another break. Again, Scott with Sharing the Burden. I'm live with Mayor. We're talking about freedom, recovery, getting rid of old bad habits, and moving on in life. So we'll be back shortly.